This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 296 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we are continuing as we started last week, kicking off the month with more Static Shock reviews, and we've officially wrapped up with last week's review of the very special episode, Jimmy. That's the end of season one and two episodes, so we are officially in the Lil Romeo era, as I like to call it, of season three and four, and we have an interesting one today that involves more of the classic storytelling that we're used to, I'd say, from the DCAU, mixed in with the standard Bang Baby of the Week style storytelling of the program. Let's talk about today's episode of Static Shock, shall we?
That's right. So this week we are talking about the episode The Usual Suspects, a little bit of a whodunit of an episode. Not really, because we think we know for a long time. I guess this is more just a thriller with a little bit of a twist in the final act to talk about, but it's going to be a fun one to talk about for sure.
That's right. We're learning the lesson of not judging a book by its cover and making sure that you properly vet all of your evidence to support your case. And we will, of course, get our full breakdown and scores for this week's episode in just a moment here. But before we do, I will remind the listeners at home, if you want to support the podcast, one of the easiest ways to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. And if you do so on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review and you live in the continental United States, we will go ahead and send you a little thank you gift if we read your review on the air. So if you want to be one of those lucky few that have gotten a lovely piece of merchandise from the DCAU Review as a thank you gift, leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and a little blurb about what you like about the pod this week. And if we read it next week, we'll reach out to you or have you reach out to us. So keep an eye on that. Liam, we will, of course, kick things off with our official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which is, of course, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe. And not only will you get our entire back catalog of podcasts, you also get two additional DCAU-themed podcasts, all for the price of free 99. That's right. Your subscription gets you three different podcast libraries, all talking about various DCAU and DC animation. It includes our podcast library, the Jump on the Batwagon podcast that is currently ongoing and tackling, I think, the new Batman Adventures and Superman, the animated series congruently. So you get double doses with that one. And then you get the entire Tim Talk podcast library, which features every episode beginning to end from the DCAU as well. All in one convenient spot on your favorite platform for streaming YouTube videos. It's youtube.com/The Pod Tower. Head over today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for The Usual Suspect, no S, written by good friend of the show, Len Yulee, directed by question mark, because nobody is credited, music by Richard Wolff, and animation by Coco. And that synopsis reads as such. Virgil runs afoul of a classmate fresh out of juvenile, while Static tries to stop a destructive new bang baby. Is his classmate up to his old tricks? I don't think any of that is good.
Yeah.
One thing.
I did like a foul. That's good. Runs a foul. It's kind of a classic terminology for, you know, using. You don't hear that one too often. But yeah, juvenile. It's not juvie. It's juvenile. I think somebody didn't get their spell check in order there. Yeah, not great.
Yeah, just a few things. I don't know about up to his old tricks, because I don't know. Just doesn't we don't know about this guy, and he wasn't a bang baby before he went to juvenile, as far as we know. So yeah, see us after class for sure. But that will bring us into the start of our episode. That's right. So we open with Virgil in upset a little bit that his sister hasn't made breakfast. But she reveals that she's a little too busy. She's working as a counselor at the rec center, and she lets him know that she's no longer going to be doing things that she isn't appreciated for, like making all of Virgil's food. So we know that that's a little bit of a framing device for later. But we know Sharon's off to a new job, and so Virgil is off to school. Whereas he and Richie are discussing various items, they bump into a very large adult man, which we are told is a high school student once again. Yeah, a static shock, even in season 3.
Yo, Godzilla, watch out! Do I look like Tokyo to you?
You dissing me, dog?
Me? No, I was just joking around. Totally on me, man. My bad.
Oh, just stay out of my way, little man.
Did you see the size of that dude? Looks like he's doing high school on the 10-year plan.
Don't you recognize Marcus Reed?
That's Marcus? He got a lot bigger. Food must be good at juvenile hall.
Yeah, don't push your luck with him, V. That is one major head case.
Hey, I could take it.
No, Static could take him. Virgil, if he wants to keep his identity secret, will stick with sniveling and running away.
You know, you're not exactly helping me with my self-esteem.
Hey, I do the best I can with what I got to work with.
I will say there's at least a good reason.
I was going to say, there's an explanation this time, at least.
They draw him to look like the monster. So that at least makes sense. But yes,
and he's been held back. Like, he's technically been held back because he did go.
Sure.
Right?
Yes. So there's at least reasons for it in story and in design, as we'll talk about. But yes, it's this guy Marcus who has spent time in juvie and has just come back, and Virgil kind of gets on his bad side immediately, and they're butting heads immediately. And so after Virgil and Richie run afoul of this Marcus, we see that Marcus is actually going to the rec center where Sharon is interning and is talking about how tough it's been to turn his life around since getting out of juvenile hall. He feels like he's trying his best to be an upstanding citizen to get his life back on track, but it's been really hard. He feels like people keep pressing his buttons and are trying to sort of call him out, and he feels like he has to respond in kind. And Sharon's doing her best to try to encourage him to not resort to violence to solve his problems, and telling him to try to take it one step at a time. And as we cut there, we see that two cops responding to some sort of call at a warehouse, and we see that there's been a hole punched in the wall, and as these two cops are discussing things, they are suddenly attacked by this giant hulking monster. Actually, it looks more like Mongol than Hulk, so I'll minimize the Hulk puns this week. But this giant monster is attacking and seems to have a specific vendetta against one of the cops in particular, which, as we come to find out a little bit later on, is because this cop is the one who arrested Marcus and sent him away to juvie. So as we go along here, we're seeing there's a pattern where all of these victims are somehow related to this this new kid or this returning kid, Marcus, and all of his various enemies that he's made over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. We get a bit of a comedy spot in that where the police officer initially refuses to have the other officer call for backup and says that it's his call to call for backup. And then once he's decimated by this hulking creature and left in a crumple on the floor, he tells the cop to call for backup. So I did chuckle at that. Thought that was funny. But yeah, the very next day, as Virgil and Richie are at the gas station hideout, discussing the fact that Sharon is now on strike from making Virgil food and from here on out after their trip to Ghana. Check out that episode if you want to hear Static in Africa, if you want to hear a review of that in the archives at dcaureview.com. But yeah, Sharon has a newfound liberation, and she's deciding to stick up for herself and no longer be subjugated to Virgil's barbs about her terrible cooking. So she's gonna stand up for herself and not make food at all for him anymore. So Virgil and Richie are instead having some fast food on the couch and watching the news. I think it's during this scene we also find out that we've updated some of what Gear does now. He's created a crime database that uses he calls it the crime database index that basically it's like Google nowadays, I would say, or like a service that compiles a bunch of Google data and aggregates it. And basically this is where he found out that this cop was the one that was responsible for Marcus's, being taken to juvenile detention, and was responsible for having him arrested. So that's where we draw our first line. And as they're discussing this, they're watching TV and the news reporter is on there talking about the attack on the cops. And then suddenly they cut to downtown where the car show happens to be happening. And they report that there's been some sort of disturbance there, a break-in. And this gets Virgil and Richie off of the couch and into their superheroic personas on their way to the convention center. They arrive just in time. And I guess this is shortly after Gear's introduction as Gear, because the police officers that are there are not familiar with who Gear is, but Backpack is there to supply a very unimpressed police officer with a business card.
Yeah, the perimeter's set. We're going in. Hold on. Static, glad you're here. Who's your friend?
This is...
Gear's my name. Technology is my game. Please, take a card. Backpack?
Thanks.
What's the situation?
The arena was unoccupied when that thing busted in. Lucky for us, the car show doesn't open for another hour.
Better make that 2 hours.
We'll find that bang baby faster if we split up.
Great idea. I got dibs on the foreign sports cars. You take the SUVs.
SUVs? What am I, a soccer mom?
I did chuckle at that bit also. Right before they go into the convention center to see what the disturbance is and investigate it, Virgil and Richie, or Gear and Static rather, go in, they split up, and Gear is distracted by a mathematical equation that's written down regarding some sort of power cell. And I thought this was going to be like a red herring an Easter egg for later on, that he would need this power cell thing for something, but it's not. It's just a throwaway joke. He's rewriting a mathematical equation in order to solve an issue with getting the most power out of whatever this engine is that he's looking at. And just when
I thought it was a Goodwill Hunting thing, right? Isn't that where Damon goes and starts fixing the equation? Except the whole point of that movie is he's like a janitor and not considered smart, but he's secretly brilliant, whereas Gear is super genius. So I don't know if that's the intention, but that was my thought when I saw a guy just go up and start writing on the writing an equation to fix the eggheads.
Maybe we can ask friend of the show Len Yuli this week, and we'll report back on our Twitter account if he does respond. But that's a good reference there. He's interrupted before he can complete the math equation though by the hulking monster who comes up behind him and smashes I will not refrain from using Hulk puns here because we do get some references and callbacks to the Incredible Hulk throughout the episode. But the monster smashes and begins creating quite the disturbance in and throughout the convention center. Static shows up and is able to sort of rescue Gear. They have their own sort of tussle that ends up with Static in the back of a pickup truck, buried under a mountain, and I mean a mountain, like thousands and thousands of hubcaps end up landing on him, and he's buried beneath it, which causes Gear to go over and attempt to rescue him, trying to pull each hubcap off one by one. And I guess it's not hubcaps, maybe it's like rotors or something like that, brake rotors or something. Anyway, it's a bunch of stuff that it's not an axle. What's the thing that the tire goes on? The wheel? I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not car guys here. If you're a
rubberless tire.
Yeah. If you're a car guy, tweet at us or X post at us, whatever the terminology is these days. Let us know what the proper name of that is. But yes, buried under that, Static is able to get himself out using, of course, these are made of metal, so he uses electromagnetic powers to move all of the heavy wheels off of him. But unfortunately, in the mayhem and in the disturbance, the monster has gotten away, leaving Static and Gear, both sort of stroking their chins as to what the disturbance was. They go outside to talk to the police to find out which way the monster went, and both of them, or all of the police, are confused, saying that they didn't see any monsters come out. So this kind of gives us the clue that there's some sort of transformation factor here, and they believe that this could be Marcus transforming from this beastly form back into human form. And this is where we kind of get some updates on what exactly is going on. We see Marcus going to Sharon for some counseling sessions, and we also learn a little bit more about Marcus's backstory as Richie continues to do his sleuthing back at the school. He discovers that he shares with Virgil that he discovered that Marcus once had a job at the convention center that he was fired from having a bad attitude. And he's also dug up some additional dirt that Marcus also had a ex-girlfriend that might be able to cough up some information about Marcus. And Virgil sets off to interview this Tamara Lawrence, who's Marcus's ex. And
big news. Marcus had a job lined up at the auto show, only his bad attitude got him fired.
Wow, this guy's really clocking the payback hours.
Oh, wait, there's more. He also used to have a girlfriend, but that is definitely in the past tense.
Which database did you get that 411 from?
I just hung around the girls' tables at lunch. You would not believe the way they talk.
Yeah. Hi, Tamara Lawrence?
Mm-hmm.
Did you used to date Marcus Reed?
Why? You writing his biography?
He's been sweating me.
Yeah, I used to go with him. And if I were you, I'd be real careful. Marcus has a nasty temper. And since that blow up at the docks, he's been real bad.
You mean after the Big Bang?
Right. After that, if we had a fight, he'd totally lose it. He'd get so mad he'd just bust the door down and run out. And I wouldn't see him again for hours. That's why I broke up with him.
Thanks for your help.
Hey, babe.
Turn it down, Dion. You know my ears are sensitive.
She doesn't provide much information other than, he had a bad temper and that she sort of moved on. And she had her heart broken by him. But she's moved on and has a new boyfriend, and she moves. She leaves Virgil standing there, and as she gets into her new boyfriend's convertible and drives away, we see the new boyfriend drop her off at the mall. It looks like she mentions that the music's too loud in the car. Important callback here that I don't think we mentioned as far as an important piece regarding the monster, but the monster also sensitive to sound, and was the only reason why they were scared off from attacking the police officer was the loud noise, and a lot of the loud noise in the convention center also seemed to bother the monster. So just laying the foundation here for that. But Tamara, as she complains about the music being too loud in the car, she gets out of the car at the mall. And the new boyfriend drives away and is almost immediately attacked by the monster, and has to be saved by Static, who is there just in time. And it's at this point that Static begins sort of connecting all the dots, and he's almost certain at this point that our suspect has to be Marcus. He has a motive to attack the new boyfriend, to destroy the car that he seems to love so much and that Tamara was impressed with. And also, of course, the other motives for attacking the police officer and the convention center as well. So it's at this point that Static and Gear come up with the idea that, well, it must be something that triggers Marcus for him to turn into the beast. It can't just be something he controls on his own. So they assume that it must be the natural thing that one would assume when a hulking creature in a hulking creature's transformation, that is that anger is the root cause. So Virgil comes up with a convoluted plan for just how he's going to trick Marcus into transforming into the monster in front of everyone, and thus confirming their thoughts that this monster and Marcus share the same identity.
It's got to be him, Rich. There's no other explanation.
Okay, then I think it's time for Static and Gear to bring him in.
No, we need proof. We have to definitely link Marcus to all those attacks. You know, Tamara said Marcus had a bad temper. Maybe that's the key.
He was mad at Officer Packard for arresting him. He was mad at the auto show for firing him.
He was mad at Tamara having a new boyfriend.
There's your formula. Marcus plus mad equals monster. If you want to make him do the old presto changeo, you gotta get him angry.
Well, that won't be hard for me. Sharon always says when it comes to irritating people, I'm the best there is.
That's right. So Virgil's grand plan is to go up to Marcus with his girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend Tamara, standing there, and just starts just insulting him. Starts talking to Tamara about how Marcus couldn't have possibly pulled off or couldn't be the new Bang Baby because he's too ugly and stupid, and Marcus is noticeably upset. And after a few insults go too far, He is determined that he's going to solve his problems with violence once again, since Virgil just won't leave him alone. And he starts racing after him, but it should be noted he is not at any point transforming into a giant yellow-orange rage monster at any point. So Virgil is openly questioning, how could this be? Why isn't he changing? He's radioing to Richie, who's trying to quickly get into his gear outfit to come help. But Virgil is clearly overmatched. And as he's hiding under a bridge in the park nearby, the monster does make an appearance and rips the bridge apart, chases Virgil down onto, one of those park merry-go-rounds.
one of those.
I love it. It's so funny.
I think they have them in New York. Did they have one?
I feel like in real, yeah, like we're maybe in like a, a big proper metropolis, a real metropolis in the traditional sense, not in the DC Comic City sense. Maybe there's these sort of public things. It was just kind of strange. It just looks like it's out in the middle of nowhere. But that's more on the visuals than on the writing, I would say. But Virgil continues to try to keep his distance, course, not wanting to use his static powers out of costume, although at a certain point I feel like it's got to just be all bets are off because you're gonna die. But he resists long enough to get some distance, and then the monster notices Marcus walking up and goes over. And as Marcus is still looking for Virgil but then sees the monster, he's sort of taken aback, which gives Virgil time to transform into Static. And here's where we get our big reveal that the monster is, in fact, not Marcus, obviously, as Gear actually alerts Virgil on the phone. a few minutes earlier that he couldn't have been the monster because he was in these counseling sessions with Sharon at the time. But in fact, we find out that the monster is the ex-girlfriend. There's a metaphor for you.
So why aren't you going after him? Marcus ain't good enough for you? I'm on to you, dog. Or should I say girlfriend?
What you talking about?
Check it, Marcus. Creature Feature wants you to take the blame for all the damage it created. Maybe because you broke up with her.
Tamra?
That's right, sweetie.
But how?
Remember the night you broke up with me? I went to the docks looking for you, hoping to get you back. You weren't there.
So the Big Bang got you.
Yeah, but not you. You walked away clean. From me and everything else.
So you blaming me for what happened?
Oh, yeah. Before, only my heart was hurting. Now, everything hurts. I tried to control it, but you got no idea what it's like to live with a monster inside you.
What are you gonna do?
What do you think?
I think it's time you started singing a different tune, homegirl.
The ex-girlfriend, the crazy ex, is the monster here, as she's apparently, as it turns out, actually that Marcus broke up with her, not the other way around. And she had gone looking for him in the streets of Dakota on the night of the Big Bang. And she was the one exposed to the gas and not him. And so that that sets up our final confrontation, a bunch of action, which we'll talk about more in visuals here as Static tries to find a way to stop her. And then he remembers Chekhov's sensitive ears.
Yeah, that's the key to the whole thing. And good thing there was that park merry-go-round there, because the park merry-go-round has one of those self-operating organs, and it runs on electricity, because all he has to do is tie the monster to the merry-go-round using some bars and shoots the electricity into the organ, and it creates loud music, of course, which hurts the monster. It does break free, but Static just increases the intensity of his power into the organ, which causes it to grow even louder, and the monster is overcome and falls to the ground, overwhelmed, unable to resist the power of the music. I think there's something there about music calming the monster too. I feel like there's an old adage about that. So, yeah,
the Savage Beast. If my Bugs Bunny cartoon memory is correct,
but yes, it works, and the beast is calmed, and she transforms back into her human form as she hits the ground, much to everybody's surprise, or to no one's surprise, but mainly Marcus's surprise. And that's kind of where we get the end of our episode, is she is hauled away. And we do get a sort of a postscript where Virgil meets up with Marcus afterwards and does apologize to him for insulting him and attempting to chide him and tease him and all that. And Marcus decides that because he's Sharon's brother, he'll forgive him this time, but Sharon is not so quick to forgive him based on his continued insults of her. So she begins chasing him down the street, and that's where we get our end of our episode. So, I will say, I really, really liked this episode's plot a lot. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of the rest of the episode. Well, we'll talk about what I did not like when we get to our next category. But as far as the plot goes, this felt much more, I will say, akin to a classic DCAU Batman the Animated Series style written episode, where you have... it's very similar in ways to the episode, the second Man Bat episode, mm-hmm. Terror in the Sky, where you have this person placed right at the beginning who they want you to think is the monster. And then the monster continues and you're like, oh, it's definitely this person. And then at the very end, you're like, wait, this can't be him. So who is it? And then oh yeah, duh, it's clearly the ex-girlfriend. And if you look back, like we said, there's a couple of little hints that they drop that she is the one that's responsible for mm-hmm. it. Very subtle hints that they drop. So I liked it. It did feel a little bit more plot driven. You get to have a little bit more fun with the mystery of what's going on. There's action. It's like wall to wall action as far as the interactions that you get. Once the monster attacks that first time, it's just action scene, a little bit of dialogue, action scene, a little bit of dialogue, more action, a little bit of dialogue, more action. So lots of action throughout. But yeah, I really, really liked Mr. Yuli's writing for this episode. I thought it was really, really strong. And it did feel authentically like something that you could appreciate regardless of the age. And I don't remember seeing this on a first run. If I had, I'd forgotten it years ago. This episode, by the way, originally debuted February the 22nd, 2003. So we're coming up on the 21-year anniversary of this episode's debut here in just a couple weeks. But yeah, no recollection of seeing this before. So it was nice to try and put it together. And it wasn't the obvious, oh, it's the new boyfriend is the monster trying to frame him, or the motivation. Also, I liked that her motivation wasn't she's like trying to get him back, like to get him back to be with him, or Marcus isn't controlling her or telling her to do this. It was purely out of spite and trying to hurt him based on this fact that she got her heart broken and was turned into a bang baby and blamed him for it. Like, so it was multiple layers there that I enjoyed. So yeah, I really liked the plot for this episode, and that's why I ended up settling on a really, really strong 8 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score. I liked this. It made me think there's another episode that we covered. I believe it's a season one episode called Tantrum, where there's like a purple Hulk guy. And I remember us talking about that episode. I very rarely remember what we say about any of these shows once we're done doing them. That's just kind of the nature of this show.
Yep.
But I remember us talking at the time that one of the things that episode kind of lacked was they don't give you any other suspects of who it could be. It's the kid who's like got the really tough, you know, home life where his parents are really pushing him to get perfect grades, and he attacks his teacher, right? It's like, and there's nobody else that has the motivation. There's no other red herrings put in there of who it could be. Whereas this episode is kind of the opposite there, in that, like you said, similar to Panic in the Sky, it's one giant red herring, in that they present it as this is the only guy it could be for most of the episode and give you all of these reasons why it's him. And yet when you get to that twist where you realize it's not, it's a really fun little, oh, holy crap moment for the episode where you kind of put it together. And as you mentioned, there are little things like you hear when she gets in her new boyfriend's car, she complains about the noise and says her ears are sensitive. And she mentions after her boyfriend's car has been destroyed, she doesn't really seem that broken up about it. And she's complaining about how he cares more about the sound system than her and all of this. So like there's little bits here where you could follow, which I also appreciate in a little, you know, twist and turn mystery type of plot where the crumbs are there, even if they aren't incredibly obvious. So it's the fact that they were able to fit in those little bits of foreshadowing in just 22 minutes, a great job by Mr. Yuli there. And yeah, I think it's just it's a fun episode. And yes, you get your moral at the end of, you know, of not judging the book by its cover, not rushing to judgment too quickly. So it's a good lesson for Static and Gear to learn at the end there. And yes, it's just kind of a fun episode.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was also surprising. You know, I didn't know what to expect with it. I think when you're used to sort of a pretty formulaic storytelling, as some of those early episodes of Static could be a little bit more elementary. It's like, all right, you know, this is going to be this guy is clearly the person that they want you to think it is the bad guy. It'll probably be the bad guy. And it's like, oh, wait a second. It's not the bad guy. And then you're kind of waiting for the end. It's like, are they actually going to reveal that it is him? And it's like, oh, it's not. And the motivation that the character has is pretty layered as well. So I really enjoyed that. So yeah, unsurprisingly, good scores from both of us there on a on a great friend of the show, Len Yulee, penned script there. Well done.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be visuals and animation. And I believe Coco Dong Yang might be responsible for this week, as if I recall.
It's a solo Coco adventure, which might be part of the problem.
Yeah. Oh, boy. To start with the episode, I noticed that there were a lot of cuts, a lot of jump cuts. Mm-hmm. And I think you and I have been watching enough of these cartoons now over the last 6-7 years, and then not counting the years that we saw them as children, to know that when that happens, we've surmised it could be because of a sequence didn't turn out very well, or there was stuff that needed to be added in to cover up for maybe some animation that fell short. That was one of the things that I noticed a lot. Characters were very off model. Everybody seemed way too skinny. And like, it was almost like the characters were, I don't know how to describe this any other way, but they were italicized. Like if you put the italics, code on your font, like that's what I felt like the characters looked like in certain scenes. They were just kind of like slanted in a weird way. It was not a appeasing episode from a lot of the sequences that I saw. And because there is so much action in the episode, it felt like those action sequences sort of had their legs cut out from under them because of the cuts that happen so frequently. You're not really able to absorb what's happening on the screen in front of you. I didn't care for that. There was also a lot of scaling issues, especially in the scene at the convention center with the cars. Sometimes the cars were too small. Sometimes the characters were the scene where Static initially falls into the back of the pickup truck, he like just barely fits into the bed of the truck, and then they cut and he's like swallowed up by it in the next cut. The mountain of car parts falling on top of him, also it didn't seem like that stack of car parts would have reached the height that it did, but somehow it was like Mount Everest height by the time that it finished landing on him. So that was something that I noticed a lot too. It wasn't just that scene that the scaling issues were stood out also, but some of the other scenes as well. But there was a couple of things also when Tamara transforms back from the monster into her human form at the end. They didn't color her properly, so all of her mm-hmm. skin and her hair remain the same, like color of the beast's skin. Mm-hmm. So that was another error that I saw. So those are the things I didn't like. Anything that I missed that you did or didn't like, and then we can talk about the things maybe we did like.
No, I think you covered it. There's a weird thing, and I have to. I guess I have to pay more attention if this is a solo Coco show problem, not necessarily a problem, but it's like the faces look weird to me.
Oh, 100%.
Like they're like a little bit too long, but they're also kind of squared off in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has like a brick head, like at least Static and Gear do. And it just doesn't look it. And obviously there was a redesign between seasons 2 and 3, but it doesn't feel like the in-house Static model at all. So that's kind of distracting for me, and I couldn't really settle into it. I agree that there were a lot of scaling issues, even with Marcus in like the scenes where he's threatening Virgil at school, or when they have their fight in front, or the where he starts chasing him in front of the soda shop or whatever it is. And the animation overall, I will say some of the action we'll get to, I think, is done well. But some of the incidental stuff, like when they cut to like the three random guys who are just there to laugh at Marcus when Virgil's making fun of him. Mm-hmm. And it just feels real like stiff and kind of, I don't want to use the word cheap because I'm sure that, you know, everybody's working within a budget, but I don't know if this one would have any less budget than the other ones were, but it just felt real stiff and rigid in a way that I'm not used to seeing with this show. So yeah, that's the negative. I will say there's some cool shots, I think, especially in that battle where when the monster shows up to wreck Tamara's new boyfriend's car and Static is like flying and sweeping through the buildings. I think there's some good looking stuff there. And I think that some of the stuff on the merry-go-round where things are in motion, Virgil's running on the merry-go-round, and the merry-go-round is spinning, and then the monster is sort of destroying the horses as they move past. I think that looks pretty cool and pretty interesting. There's certainly parts of it where things are in motion that look good, but yeah, the overall, I guess this would get like an inconsistent feeling for me, because I think some of the action is done really well, but some of the more incidental or some of the dialogue scenes is where I feel like this episode struggles more.
Yeah, there are the characters do feel pretty stiff, especially in that, I would say, that first third of the episode. There's some weird, like, it's all just like chest up shots of them kind of just stiffly, and their eyes are really the only things that are moving when they're talking to each other and they're standing next to each other. It's not a great showcase for the Coco animation studio for this episode. And again, it could be, I've hammered on some things that I didn't like. I did like the monster design. I thought it was interesting enough. Again, it wasn't just like a straight Hulk ripoff. The face I thought was pretty unique looking. The character designs were getting at least somewhat more close to what you might see in a DCAU show, I think, by this point. So I liked the merry-go-round sequence initially. There's like a portion where Static gets on the merry-go-round and the merry-go-round starts to go and he's running towards you. Maybe, is it Virgil still at the time? I forget.
Yeah, like, I think it's
Virgil still, right? Mm-hmm. He runs towards the screen, the viewer, and the monster is sort of off to the side, but the merry-go-round itself is the only thing that's turning, which makes sense because the monster on the side is not moving. It would stay in one place. What's turning is the merry-go-round itself. So I thought that was really neat. But again, it's like a split second. And then, the monster stops the merry-go-round. So it's like, oh, well, we don't even really get a full rotation of the merry-go-round and to see what that would look like. So, but I thought that was neat, at least. Static, using his powers to shoot into the organ, and we get these close-up shots of the organ pipes and the I'm sure there's probably a name for that, for the organ thing that you rotate that makes the sound. I forget what that's called. It's not recorder. It's something like that. If there's somebody that's a music nerd listening, they'll probably tell us what that is. That Static shoots the electricity into. I liked that was how that was animated. It did feel very, Disney movie-esque, where you would see that and it's spinning so fast that you can't really see it, but you do make out some of the details, the little marks that are causing the music to come out of the organ pipe. So there were some details that they did pay attention to that were interesting, and some visual items. Who isn't excited about a fight happening in and around a merry-go-round? Like, that's a pretty cool spot for a fight to happen. We saw it in Robin's Reckoning. I think that's the last time we saw a merry-go-round probably used in animation on this show. So yeah, there were a couple of things, but largely this is a poorly animated episode that is very stiff at times, that has a lot of issues that unfortunately were way too distracting for me, and I wasn't very really able to recover once I kind of saw the things that I saw. So I ended up giving this a 4 out of 10 when it came to animation and visuals. What about you?
Yeah, I went with a 5. Like I said, I do think some of the action and some of the more tricky things they pull off pretty well. Like I said, Static kind of sweeping and flying through the city is pretty well done and all that. So there's definitely some pluses, but yeah, it just comes down inconsistent. And a lot of this episode, even though there is a lot of action, there are a lot of fights, there is also a lot of dialogue driven sequences, and it just felt really stiff. And as you already mentioned, the cuts, we've talked about that, sometimes that's sort of your last resort to make an episode work, short of we've talked about that on the other shows, short of sending it back and having them remake it from scratch when you're on deadlines and stuff. So I feel like the cuts were probably kind of getting around some further animation, so maybe this could have been an even lower score. But yeah, overall, it's certainly not the worst visual episode we've seen, but not a strong one by any means.
All right, Lane, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And forgive me, was it Richard Wolf responsible for this week's music? The static legend, Richard Wolf, responsible for this week's music. And, people tune into this segment when we do static episodes simply to hear me read some of the lyrics to the songs. And I personally wrote down the lyrics to one of the songs, which I guess was sort of the Monsters theme, that was sort of Marcus's theme also, is want to go toe to toe, want to go dough for dough. Just kind of that over and over again was the fight sequence, like Marcus's theme of him. It shows up when he initially like bumps into Static and is kind of established as the hulking bully prototype for the episode, and then it kind of comes back later on when Static is being chased, or when Virgil's being chased by Marcus through the park after he's sit there and verbally undressed him in front of his friends. So that's one of the songs. We get the I guess I discovered today, or today I learned, as the kids say, today I learned that the community center has its own theme song. It plays every time that they go to the community center. It's sort of that like wacky, it's a keyboard and it's like, wah, 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 wah. That one, like that's like the community center theme song trademark. Like it plays each and every time that I see, I'm sure it's used in other sequences also, but every time that I've seen the community center recently, that's the theme song that they play. So today I learned that was the community center theme. And then I think the true main event has to be the spoof of Snap's 1990 hit, I've Got the Power, which was changed, the lyrics changed for this show to Can't Fight the Power, Can't Shake It, Can't Break It, Can't Fake It Off. Can't Shake It Off, Can't Break It Off, Can't Fake It Off. Can't Fight the Power, Can't Fight the Power, Can't Fight the Power. That one was immediately recognizable as like a, okay, we know exactly what they're going for with this tune. And I'm not going to lie, kind of liked it.
Well, you know, I liked it. It was, I had a great deal of fun with the music in this one. And I enjoyed the Can't Fight the Power. I liked the bit where Marcus is chasing Virgil and we get the song about like the want to go toe for toe. Might have been my favorite one of the episode. But yeah, I ended up giving music a very strong 8 out of 10. I just adored it. I loved the Can't Fight the Power. I was like, yeah, there's like some weird little sitcom beats in there too. There's like a little like Sanford and Son thing with when he realizes he's not getting breakfast in the first bit.
Like, oh yeah, there.
Yeah, there's some really quirky like sitcom beats on some of that. Or when Richie's talking about how like, oh, you wouldn't believe what these girls talk about at lunch.
Yeah,
like, there's some real funny little like sitcom flourishes put in there as well.
Yeah, there are some certainly memorable moments. I did not give it an 8 out of 10. It has to be something absolutely off the wall. While I did enjoy Fight the Power, or Can't Fight the Power, the rest of the other song was a little bit distracting for the sequence. So I went with 6 out of 10, which, hey, if you know me and if you listened to our prior reviews and my scores for the music, that's a relatively high score here. We're improving. I'm not completely swearing off the music for every episode. So yeah, a 6 out of 10 for me, a very different 8 out of 10 for you. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up today with our final category of the show. And that of course will be voice acting. We have some notable guest stars. I guess maybe maybe a DCAU favorite and interestingly enough, a name that we'll recognize, and he's not doing a voice of an animal or monster for a change. It's very strange, especially in an episode featuring a monster. Let's talk about this week's voice cast, shall we?
Yeah, as you noted, Frank Welker in the cast is one of the police officers. But surprisingly, he's not also voicing the monster growly noises. That is his compatriot D. Bradley Baker, who's like the other guy who was always playing playing animals and monsters in cartoons for the last, you know, 15-20 years. So it's funny, kind of a funny bit to cast him in a monster episode and not use him as the monster. That's kind of a funny casting idea. I like it though. I think it's kind of a fun bit. I like his surly veteran cop portrayal there. But elsewhere we have, of course, briefly we have Maria Canales Barrera as the reporter, Shelley Sandoval. Michelle Morgan as Sharon gets a little bit more to do this week. I like her as like the counselor trying to convince Marcus not to give in to his demons. We're a few seasons in and she's mostly just there to quip with Virgil. So it's kind of fun when she gets a little bit more to do in an episode.
Yeah. Yeah. She doesn't, I thought her back and forth with Marcus's character was maybe the most interesting, where she talks about, you know, he's sitting there struggling with her in their counseling session and talks about how his identity is sort of the bad guy. Like, the people think that he's this thug and he doesn't want to be this thug, but he feels like because he's already been painted as this type of person, he doesn't really have a choice. And she's there to remind him that his identity is not what people say you are, but it's what you truly desire and what you want to be. And you have a say in whether or not you kind of prove them right or wrong. And she uses that as an opportunity to sort of motivate him. And she does it in sort of a comedic way. And I thought that, it was a different side. As you mentioned, usually it's straight up quips and back and forth and arguing with Virgil, which we do get bookending the episode, but you do get that little sequence there where she gets to show a little bit more of her acting chops. And I thought she did a good job.
Agreed. Elsewhere in our cast, we do have playing Marcus, our red herring for our villain this week. We have Sean Patrick Thomas, who is in one of the more modern Halloween movies, as well as one of the vampire movie as well. I think both Wes Craven productions there. But him as Marcus, part of it, I think, is that he sounds like a 30-year-old man. But to me, it just feels like a guy reading off a page. I wasn't thrilled with his. I think maybe he gets a little bit more to do in those scenes with Sharon at the end, or earlier in the rec center, and then at the end, like, he gets a little bit more to do. But it just feels like part of that is also probably on the script, because we're supposed, like we said, we're kind of setting up that he's the only person who could possibly be the bad guy for so much of it. So I guess maybe that's part of it too, is you're kind of maybe intentionally playing him very one note. Mm-hmm. And then he just kind of sounds grumpy all the time. But I didn't love the performance, but as I'm talking about it now, maybe that's more on sort of what was asked for him based on where the story was going.
I mean, to your point, anytime that you cast a adult male in a role where he's supposed to be playing, even if it's a high school student that's held back, it does feel a little bit distracting, especially maybe you wouldn't notice as a kid, but as an adult, us watching this, it's like, man, that sounds like a 50-year-old man that's doing the voice there, a 40-year-old man doing the voice of this teenager or whatever. So yeah, that is a little bit distracting. And yeah, I think the scene with Sharon, he sort of gets to show a little bit, you know, as we said, he's kind of lamenting the fact that he's sort of painted into this corner of being who people think he is simply because of his past. But I think the real moment that he gets to shine is sort of that moment where he's in disbelief at the end, that he doesn't quite understand why his ex-girlfriend would, you know, seek revenge on him in this way to try and frame him. And he, you know, sort of just kind of taken aback. And then we get the little wrap up at the end where he agrees to, you know, kind of the peace agreement with Virgil going forward, since he apologizes and is related to his therapist or his counselor. So yeah, maybe not anything that you would write home about as far as the performance is concerned. But you know, you're right. That could have been something just based on the direction on the script or what have you. He was clearly designed to kind of be the archetype for an Incredible Hulk, like understated in order to highlight when he does get angry. So maybe that was the direction. Like in these moments, you're supposed to be kind of like calm and quiet, but in order to offset your anger in those moments so that we can really drive home the fact that you're the monster or might be the monster.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, I don't necessarily put the blame on our actor here, but it was just, yeah, it's kind of what I picked up. It just felt like kind of every line reading was the same, but again, maybe that's what they were looking for. But elsewhere, we have Ariane Johnson. Apologize if I'm butchering that, as Tamara. She, again, not a lot for her to do. I do like that at the end, they have her and Dee Bradley Baker, like, they combine the voices. So we have this like really what's the claw from Inspector Gadget, like growly voice from Dee Bradley Baker. And then we have her speaking in her regular voice at the same time. And I think that's a cool effect. And I think both actors do a good job in that final scene where we make the big reveal, and that not only that, but she's not really a rage monster. Like, she's fully aware of what she's doing. She was just using that, you know, Marcus's anger issues as sort of a cover for her doing whatever she wanted. So I think that final scene where both her and Mr. Baker are speaking at the same time is a good showcase for both of them.
Yeah, I agree. No, I love the double voice effect. You know, we always struggle with like, where do we put that? I think in this case, it makes sense to put it in the voice acting because it is a layered voice, and it's not just like a different effect that they put on something or sound design. It's that layered voice, and having that's really the point where I think she gets to kind of flex her muscles. She's kind of, I think maybe, again, the script calls for her to sort of just be disinterested and not really show a lot of emotion when Virgil's kind of trying to shake her down for information and, you know, to throw you off the scent. But yeah, she kind of does get to at least flex her muscles a little bit. And the layered voice with Mr. Baker's voice on top of hers is certainly an added bonus to kind of really make her feel like a threat. And a unique way of getting both actors the ability to sort of communicate that character through it. Otherwise, if it was just the deep voice, because of the way that the character, I think, visually looks, it would be really difficult to believe the character is the woman, like is her. But this, if you had just used her voice also, it would have been ridiculous because you would have this big hulking monster with this, you know, this sort of, you know, very feminine real voice. So the fact that you layered it is a way just to drive the home that's the both and the monster, like she is both of these people. So yeah, it was a good reveal and a neat trick that they did, and one that wasn't really overused or used too much in the DCAU. So I did enjoy that as well. Maybe Lex and Brainiac is probably the other famous attempt at doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I know we've talked about like when like a man bat or somebody is transforming, sometimes they put like the effect on the voice, but just like you said, kind of layering it. And there may be some effect work or engineering on Mr. Baker's part of that as well, or to meld the voices more perfectly. Maybe there is, but yeah, as it is, it's kind of fun to have two actors playing one character at the same time is a really neat trick. So I enjoyed that quite a bit. And then, of course, we have our two leads, Jason Marsden as Gear / Richie and Phil Lamar as Virgil. Again, it's like they're good, solid. I think we get to see them now that Richie's firmly in the superhero category. There's more reason for them to like constantly be together, even in the action. So you get more of their banter and their discussions as the episodes go on, I feel like. So I think they do a solid job. I think Jason Marsden has a couple really funny lines. Like I mentioned when he's like, when they're talking about how, you know, his database and all this crazy tech he has. And they're like, well, how did you figure out that, that Marcus was dumped by Tamara? And he's like, oh, I just hung out with at the girls' table. Like, I think that's really, there's some really funny, funny line deliveries. Like I said, there's some real like sitcom quality to some of the beats in here between Phil Lamar and Jason Marsden. And then, Phil Lamar and Melina Morgan as Sharon as well. So yeah, there's some fun quirky dialogue for them as we settle more into our like superhero buddy cop genre that we're in for the rest of this series.
Yeah, they do get some good back and forth. It really does set up sort of the friendship between the two of them, whether they're, you know, having fast food on the couch or trying to work together to figure out the identity of this villain. I do like at the end, we do kind of get the characters are in a different place, as we always say, than when they started. And, you know, you get them kind of wrapping things up at the end, recognizing, hey, we gotta be making sure that we're not just looking at the obvious things here, but truly vetting everything that we're thinking here with supporting evidence, hard evidence as opposed to just, you know, circumstantial evidence. So I like that they have a lot of good banter back and forth. And I think both Mr. Marsden and Mr. Lamar, very unsurprisingly, very, very, very did a solid job this week. So no complaints here for either of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for that reason, I ended up settling on a pretty strong 7 out of 10 for my voice acting score. I think a lot of it comes in Miss Johnson and Mr. Baker's turns as our big monster villain towards the end there, and then just on the strengths of our leads. But good solid outing, I thought.
Yeah, I gave it the same exact score, 7 out of 10. So I nothing to disagree with you on that. About solid all the way around, except for one of our categories. That's all. Liam, let's wrap things up here and total up our scores. And totaling everything up here, I end up with a 25 out of 40. What about you?
And I am just a few points higher at a 28 out of 40. As far as rewatchability goes, which we always talk about here, technically this character does come back, but it's like a cameo for 2 seconds in the final episode. So wouldn't say this is a must watch. But it's, you know, it's a good solid episode. It's the first episode where Gear meets the cops. Is that anything? I feel like I'm grasping at straws here. Even though it's an episode I did like, I wouldn't say it's massively important to the overall show, or
right,
certainly not to the universe as a whole.
So the dual criteria that we use, not important to the overall universe or the show. However, it is a good episode that we both agreed that the plot is really interesting. If you're going to sit down and watch a couple of episodes, would I give this a rewatch? I don't know that I can say 100%. My gut would say, yeah, I'd watch it. It was entertaining enough. It was interesting enough. And who knows, by the next time I would have the opportunity to watch this, I might forget the twist. So if I'm talking 50 years from now, whenever now is that I'm giving this a, you know, hey, should I watch this episode? I might go, yeah, I'm going to watch this episode.
It does cross the threshold that we talk about a lot, which is our characters are in a little bit of a different place than they were at the start. Like we talked about how Virgil and Richie kind of learn the lesson about, you know, profiling someone based on their past actions and about, you know, not necessarily, you know, gaining all of the facts before assuming that you know exactly what's going on. So, you know, we learn a good solid lesson, and it's a little less edutainment. Virgil doesn't give a monologue into camera this week to discuss not jumping to conclusions. So I appreciate it being a bit more organic of a lesson learned than maybe last week's was.
That's a good point. All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, we love your support for the podcast, and there are several ways that you can do so. As we mentioned at the top, you can leave a 5-star review no matter what podcast app you listen to. If it allows you to do so, leave a 5-star review, and especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you're listening on Spotify, you can always interact with our weekly polls or quizzes that we offer for you, question of the week. Feel free to interact with those. We love seeing them. We got some people that consistently answer every single week, and I love reading them once I get the opportunity to get caught up on them. So thank you for doing so. You can also subscribe to us on those lovely podcast platforms. You can also, of course, as we mentioned at the top, subscribe to us on the Pod Tower on YouTube. Check out the show notes if you want to support us monetarily. There's two links. One is to our store where you can pick up a piece of merchandise, new merch dropping at some point in 2024. I promise I'll work on some funny stuff. If you want to pick up a new mug or a shirt, hat maybe, you can support us that way. You can also donate to us directly if you want to support the podcast financially. We have a few people that do that. Their hard-earned dollars go to support us at those midnight hour when I'm looking to get that final edit done and posted onto our platform. I got to remember, this is for the people that support us monetarily. So greatly Absolutely. Appreciate those that do are kind and generous enough to share with us, Liam. Liam, we will, of course, remind the folks they can also interact with us in a couple different ways via social media at DCAU Review on formerly Twitter, now X, and also on Instagram. You can drop into our DMs, comment on our post, whatever the modern day version of tweeting at someone is. You can also check us out. We are on Facebook and Threads. Those are platforms we use far less often, however. Liam, one of the things that we drop on our platforms of social media each week is we tend to do a little previewing of what we will be reviewing next week with a clip or some posts discussing some interesting factoids. So why don't we drop now what we'll be talking about on next week's episode, shall we?
That is right. And next week we will be looking at another season 3 episode, that being entitled Showtime. And this is a very interesting episode, and it introduces a somewhat returning character of this sleazy Hollywood producer who comes to town to try to entice not Virgil and Richie, but Static and Gear, and really more Static in particular, into getting a reality show made about his life. And there might be a little bit of professional jealousy, we'll say, and all the attention that Static is getting as opposed to Static and Gear. So looking forward to talking about that episode, Showtime, next week.
Acrimony between Gear and Static? Say it ain't so, bro. can't wait to check out that one with you on next week's episode. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on that next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.